In the grand theater of life, we all seek a comeback, a resurgence, a rekindling of our inner fire. But how do we spark that flame? Welcome to Reignite Resilience. This is not just another podcast. This is a journey, a venture into the heart of human spirit, the power of resilience, and the art of reigniting our passions.
Welcome back to part three of our three-part interview with Dr. John Molitor. We hope that you have enjoyed the first two sessions with Dr. John. In today's session, we're going to continue right where we left off. We will start to hear a little bit more about Dr. John and his journey into studying the brain and having such an expansive and extensive understanding of how our brains work. And we'll also make sure that we take a little bit of time to dial into the connection that we have between the brain, the spine, and the organs, and how that can help in navigating not just resiliency in your life, but how you're engaging and interacting with other people. We hope you enjoy.
Very early on in my education, I was introduced to this concept, and it hit very close to me and dear to me. And Pam knows this, so I'm one of 10. I grew up with 10 siblings. And the concept was, the author called it, a family of hypotheses, and said you should not have a favorite child. You need to have a family of hypotheses. So more and more I find as I go through life, say I'm driving along and somebody cuts me off. Well, again, the way the brain is, that's perceived as a threat. All of a sudden, it's like you're going to have a dump of adrenaline. And then all of a sudden, it's like, why do they do this? You know, and it's like, So what I tend to do now is I generate a whole family of hypotheses that might account for their behavior. Maybe they have to get home because there's an illness and they're so focused on getting home, they cut me off. Maybe they had a horrible day and they are thinking about it and weren't paying attention. So I just generate, and again, they can be totally mindless, but it's like, it takes, again, am I going to be then sitting there going, I'm going to tailgate them now and I'm going to pull right up next to them to let them know I'm really pissed. They don't even know you're there typically. It's like somebody cuts in front of you in the line. It's like you close the distance behind them as if to say, how dare you? Or here's the other one we see, checkout line, 12 items or less. And then you pull up in line and then you peek around and look, you start counting the number of items in the basket. And then you realize they have 15. And you're thinking, you are so stupid, you can't even read the 12. And so you close the distance as if it says to them, you're stupid. Well, they don't care. It's like, because maybe they have 3 cans of tomato, that counts once, you know? It's like, come on, that's So if you generate this family of hypotheses, I think it takes you out of
that judgment and conclusion.
Yeah, that kind of circular chaos that we get in. Yeah. Why are they doing this to me?
To me. Mm-hmm. It makes you the victim. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly. And then again, it's like the control. No, I can generate. Now, I say all that, but I also, there are situations where it's like, if a child is putting their hand toward a hot stove, I'm not going to go, let me generate 5 hypotheses why they're doing it. It's like, it's going to be no. You know, in our world, in medicine, it's sort of like, if the student or the resident is about to cut in an area they shouldn't be cutting, I'm not going to go, you know, I think that if you do that, it might result in a poor outcome for the patient, versus like, stop. You know?
Exactly.
And then sometimes though, the learner then thinks, well, they're being harsh or they're being mean. Mm-hmm. And so again, we have this funny kind of dynamic going on in our society that if you're sharp with someone, that's mean versus, So what we're having to teach people to do. So if the surgeon says, stop, explain why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Versus just stop. And then the bad thing, I'm going to go all the way back to the beginning. Then the labeling, stop. What are you, stupid?
Go back to the process.
Process. Right?
Make it a process, not the person.
Had you cut here, or had you done this, this would have then caused this, which would have meant we had to do this, which meant this. Mm-hmm. We couldn't do this, and yada, yada, yada.
Well, Dr. John, I don't typically have road rage, and I do have a couple of key things that I keep in my pocket in terms of the family of hypothesis. I didn't know that I was doing this. One's graphic. I won't share that one. The other is that if it's during rush hour, it's, gosh, they must be late for work, right? Like, that's what I just tell myself. I'm like, oh, they must be late for work. I'm not late for my meeting, so I'm going to continue going at this pace. Mm-hmm. The other one that I make has to deal with them having some intestinal issues that they need to get to wherever they're going quickly.
Well, that's not the gross one. I can't wait to hear what gross one is.
That's the gross one.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Oh my gosh, that is great. I love it.
That is so funny, because what I've noticed is my ability to have the family of hypotheses when stuff happens tends to do with what my mood is in that moment. If I'm running late to something, those are out the window, and I'm riding their tail and I'm getting all upset. So yeah, a lot of it has to do with where I am in that moment. So I have to really check myself so that I do have those moments of empathy where I'm like, you know, I have no idea what's going on in this person's world right now. And so I need to take it that I'm okay. I've got an extra 10 minutes. And what happens if I am late? You know, probably going to be just fine.
There's an acronym out there. It's called HALT, H-A-L-T. And so it's in situations like this, and they have you do, again, it's, I would call the self-examination. Mm-hmm. So if you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, HALT, because you'll be more inclined than to be what we would say set off, or yes, there be trigger. And even now the people have sort of combined two of them, the I'm hangry, you know, or they're hungry, yes, and angry, or
yes,
the hunger is leading to anger. But again, HALT is probably a good way to, yeah, like before I react, is like, HALT, are you hungry? Are you angry? Are you lonely? Are you tired?
Yeah. And a great lesson with kids as a parent or a teacher where you're working with kids is ask these questions. Okay, right now, where are they at? Are they hungry? Because I knew, boy, when my son got hungry, I had to go get him a snack. I didn't even say anything before he had a snack. Feeling lonely or tired. You and I will talk about, oh, we're hangry, yes, right now. We need a Snickers bar.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
I love
exactly
that. HALT.
Well, Dr. John, as we talk about our brain, and as you know, the key focus on this podcast is really about resiliency. Are there, mm-hmm, ways that we can build our resiliency from the standpoint of thinking about our brain and how it impacts, mm-hmm, our lives and how we move forward?
I would take us all the way back to the beginning where we talked about labeling versus process.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one of the things that, since the brain's going to be predicting, and it goes to your memory or experiences to then make a prediction, you want to build up a variety of processes or process statements. I actually handled that pretty well.
Okay.
I didn't lose my temper. I remained calm throughout. Or I started calm and then found myself rising up a little bit, but then I was able to take it down. And you need to make those statements or journal them. Natalie, as you had mentioned, the journaling, mm-hmm, is that those become then the new memories, the new experiences. So in future situations, when the brain's going to predict, it's like, oh, I got 5 experiences where I handled myself pretty well. Or I have 10 experiences where I didn't rise to the bait, or I didn't get depressed, or I didn't. And so that's what you want to do in terms of resiliency.
Yeah,
love that.
When you can make them, this is so important. What you say to yourself has to be the truth. The brain sort of has, I'm going to call, a built-in BS meter for yourself. And it has a built, can I say BS on the podcast?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Just 2 letters.
So it has a truth detector. And you know your structure, internal structure, so well. The brain knows when you're BSing it or not telling the truth. So for me, words become important. And then the more I can frame it into what I did and the truth is in it, that then is going to be good. Because if I say to myself, oh, I'm a 6'9" chiseled human being that can play in the NBA, my brain, not only is going to say that's BS, it's going to be like killing itself, rolling on the floor, laughing, going, you are such an idiot. I mean, you know, are you delusional? What's going on? So, but the truth of it might be, I walked today for 3 miles, which is true. I felt good today. I did a cold shower that then released adrenaline because I knew we had this coming up. I didn't want to be fighting. I don't drink caffeine, but it, like if I had mm-hmm. caffeine and I was then actually dropping at this hour,
yeah.
Or if I was eating food, because what happens when you eat food is the blood from your brain goes down to help digest the food. And usually the eyes want to follow when they're going down. It's like, so did the eyes. Like, yeah, it's so much fun talking to you. Hello.
Oh my God.
Versus sort of being charged up. So I think the resiliency is make truthful statements to yourself mm-hmm. in your journaling, or if you're writing this out, do that. Before I go to sleep, I'm going to congratulate myself, or I'm going to say, I want to pay attention to the pattern I used today that was helpful to me, and let the brain start to then process during your sleep.
I love that.
And it's not like, you know how we, what do we call it? The silver bullet, the magic bullet, the one-off solution. The one-offs are actually traumatic, remember? Because it's like, mm-hmm. it's a one-off, boom. And you don't want that. You want the slow, incremental, and it's shocking how quickly that adds up because it's a habit. It now mm-hmm. requires least amount of energy. It then becomes mm-hmm. wired in. It then helps predict the future, mm-hmm. but you're doing it systematically. And so there's huge amount of hope in this, huge amount of ability, and it just starts small.
Yeah.
Starts small. And again, that's why I love the 10 minutes walking for yourself, because mm-hmm. now we're getting further benefit. Your oxygen, you're getting oxygen to the brain. The brain loves oxygen.
So Dr. John, could this be used with children as you're raising children and they're handling adversity, you know, whether they're small things or little things, and basically coming up with a process or things that you say to them about recognizing how they worked through something to kind
Absolutely.
Of get to that same space that we want to try to get ourselves to.
Absolutely. And even probably even easier with kids because
yeah, absolutely.
Their brains are more plastic. They can be wired.
Interesting.
You know, so you do a lot of questions. And again, Pam, you know this from the coaching side.
Yeah.
It's what else might you have taken into account? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you may have to guide them a little bit. Did you think about what your sister might feel if that happened? A little bit harder for them to get outside of themselves because their world is a little more egocentric, if you will. But you start doing that, it's that there are other opinions, there's other thoughts. Doesn't mean that you're bad, doesn't mean that you're wrong. It just means that there are other ways, other ideas, other things. And so you start introducing them to that.
I love that.
Yeah, for kids, it's really smart. And I feel pretty strongly about process versus product or label. You can apply process wherever it matches up with your talents.
Yes.
Labeling, there's always going to be somebody smarter than me. There's always going to be, although this is not hard, better looking than I am, or, you know, better whatever. It's like, but maybe I'm the one that puts together all the combos.
Exactly. Yeah. So the label basically creates the box versus the process. It creates that mm-hmm. system.
I think so. And and it's easy then to say, I'm X. I have cancer versus I'm working through the process of cancer. Or I had trauma, or I was abused as a child, or I was told I'd never amount to anything. Then you start changing that process.
Yeah.
I did this right. I'm good at this.
Mm-hmm.
I recognize when there's tension in a room. I can go into a room and read, you know, whatever it is. They could say, I could go into the room and read the room. Mm-hmm. That's a talent not everybody has. Or I can immediately find the person who's hurting and build rapport. Again, you find something from that, small, incremental, little bits at a time.
Well, and when you talk about like the big incidents, you said something that really resonated. So I want to make sure that I'm understanding correctly. Like when we talk about something traumatic, I go automatically to something negative. But if we have those like moments where it's something big happens, it's still an incident that it's a standalone. So The example that I had is, you know, if you look at someone that has recently won the lottery, but now, like, that's a big incident. And then, you know, 5 years later, they're bankrupt, right? So that's a story that we often hear with lottery winners, where you see that incident as a big positive, like you just won multiple millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And somehow you've managed to deplete all of that and become bankrupt. Now the rewiring that person has is not a positive one in winning the lottery, but one that has negatively impacted them.
Correct. And so you have it both for the person that it happens to, and then the rest of us that look at them and go, lucky, what a lucky, lucky soul.
Exactly.
But family of hypothesis, like you said, I mean, the research is pretty clear. The percentage of people that are bankrupt within 1 year or have lost all the money earnings within 1 year is an astronomically high number. Yeah. And so what they found is, whatever your attitude, belief towards money, if you have that and it's locked in, so let's say you were raised to be frugal or that never put anything on credit or whatever, and again, that's your wiring, you will actually probably sustain that then through the, versus this is a windfall. I need to go buy the yacht, the brand new, you know, Maserati. I'm assuming that costs a lot of money. You know, I need to take a trip around the world, you know, first class. Yeah. Because then you're probably that maybe their mindset or what they're raised with is one of lack. And so the money will fill this lack and then it won't fill it.
It doesn't.
Now, the person that has the experience, again, probably depends on. So if my mindset, so I get this windfall, it's like, first person I'm calling is a tax attorney. The second person I'm calling is, you know, legal advisor. Third person is find out and people who actually know how to handle big dollars. But that's my mindset that I'm not a financial planner. I'm not a financial, but hopefully my brain is strong enough to do that. If I don't have that, then yes, eventually the event could be, I don't know. Again, we can't predict. Maybe it was 5 years of great living and I'm back to where I was, but it was five great years. So maybe it's not a traumatic event, or it's like, wow, how did I blow through all that money and have nothing to show for it? So it very much depends on, I would call it that mindset, your belief, your experiences, and how you put it together.
Beautiful. I love that. Is there anything else that you would want to share in terms of building resilience via the brain? This is not my area of expertise, so thank you for being the expert on the topic and bringing so much knowledge. But are we missing anything? What else do we need to be aware of as we go out and continue to build resilience in our lives and as our listeners do the same?
A couple of things come to mind. One is they've done some surveys, studies, and they look at the number of times a child hears the word no versus yes. So that's one aspect. The other aspect goes to the third principle we talked about, is that when given a choice, the brain will choose the least amount of energy. So typically, no will occur more often than yes. So Pam, do you want to plan a 2-week vacation trip tomorrow? No, maybe when I have some free time.
Yeah.
Natalie, do you want to go off and play frisbee golf? I don't even know what frisbee golf is. It's like, no, I don't know what that is and doesn't sound like much fun. So we probably default to no to conserve energy. Mm. So when something happens to you that's bad, there's probably a tendency to say no more often than yes.
Mm.
Because yes may require energy. And when you're hurt or not feeling good or depressed or off your game, whatever metaphor you want to use, it's probably easier to say no. So if I were working with someone and I wanted to build resiliency, I would make we statements. We're going to go walk down to the stop sign here and I need you with me. So it's we and I need. I would probably then say statements like, it would really help me if you could do this. Because now I'm trying to pull the person a little bit outside of themselves and that they're doing something for someone else, i.e. me.
Mm-hmm.
And I would try to do that. I would then try to do it very small, incrementally, and then make sure that they feel good about what they did.
So if you just, the example that you used with Pam, if it's, you know, we need to take a 2-week vacation to finish, you know, planning insert project, and I need you to hop on a call with me to knock that out in the next hour. Could you do it? She's probably more apt to say yes right. to helping me than just saying, mm-hmm. hey, can you plan that 2-week retreat?
Exactly. And so you make it so it's easy to say yes.
Yeah.
Versus no. And so again, I would add probably to the call, I'd say, Pam, it would really help me. I need your help. I love how you see things that I'm blind to or mm-hmm. I'm oblivious to. And you need, I'll frame up the bulk of it, but I need you. So again, I'm lightening the load.
Yes.
Expenditure. And then tying it to what I would say she does naturally, which is not, so she's naturally good in this area that I need, and I may not even need it.
Yeah.
But I still set it up that way. Then her brain's going, if he just wants me to talk about stuff I do all the time, that's not going to require a lot of energy. I can do that.
Exactly.
Versus if I go, Pam, I really need you to come up with a 9-part strategic plan, each part having 3 subsections, one dealing with the owner, then broker, then agent. And then we need to then be able to take it across state borders, beyond region. And there might even be an international component. I'd probably hear click, Pam, you there? Click, Pam, 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 yeah. Bad connection, Pam.
Well, does that go also with our need for community? Because if you told me to do it and I'm like on my own with that, no. But if you said we need to do this, we need to go down to the stop sign together, yeah. I am way more inclined to do that because I'm not alone.
That's the social aspect that we talked about. That we're social beings.
Yes.
Although, and again, people confuse the introversion and extroversion factor on that. I mean, introverts are as social as most. It's just, you know, they're happy with an in-depth conversation with one person, where an extrovert might be happy with a non-in-depth conversation with 500 people, and both feel like really, you know, vitalized. Yeah. So it is the community aspect. It's the social aspect of it. When people are isolated, that's when there's problems. And we even know people could be in a crowd and yet their brain has isolated themselves.
Well, and Dr. John, I want to just go back in case anyone missed it. The way that I wrote it down, that I took notes on this, is it's a we statement. So we insert the action and I need insert what you need from that person. And then following that up with, it would help me if you could do this.
Yep.
Turning it into a request.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Love that.
I think that's so powerful. I am implementing that right away. And it feels much better than me voluntelling people to do things, right? Now
right.
I can tap into, hey, I need you. We need to do this. And here's what I need from it. Yeah. Or here's how you can grow from this. Or what I see in terms of the strengths and abilities that you bring to the table. And
yeah, and especially in trauma or any traumatic type situations, you want to start very small. Because if you go like, Pam, I really need this. You're the only person that could possibly, again, it doesn't have that ring of truth. Like, am I really the only person right in the universe? Versus, I really love how you've approached it.
Yes.
It resonates with me. I enjoy it. And then that's the truth. And so words become important, but I wouldn't focus on them, that I'd be editing myself like crazy. And the more you do it, the better you become at using the right words.
The more natural it becomes, because in turn, you're creating a habit yourself, right? And just how we ask other individuals to help us in things, we've adjusted how we make the ask.
Love it.
All right, so I'm going to leave you with one last one, unless you have even more questions.
No, please do. I love this.
So this one I've been reading about, trying to figure out how this works. So the brain is just one part of your nervous system. So your nervous system is your brain, your spinal cord, and your organs, and the communication to and from the brain, spinal cord, and the organ. So it's back and forth. So for example, we know that in your gut, there's probably about 100,000 neurons. Now, some people call it a second brain. There's a group of us don't call it a second brain. But the fact is, there's like about 100,000 neurons in your gut. So when they talk about a brain gut or the gut biome, there's communication that's going between then your gut and your brain. And so I think it took neuroscience a little while to catch up to the statement like, so Natalie, why'd you make that decision? Well, I just had a gut feeling. Mm-hmm. Once again, it's sort of a communication to and from. So because the brain is part of the nervous system, and then we talked about the central nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, blah, blah, blah. We're just going to talk about nervous system, those three components, the brain, spinal cord, organs, and then this communication from the organs and from the brain to the organs. So it's back and forth. So I'm intrigued by this concept that if I were to build or want to rebuild rapport or communication style with you, Natalie, or you, Pam, I need to align my nervous system with your nervous system. Now, it's not there was research in the 90s about mirroring, and then there's this concept of mirror neurons. I don't know where I'm at that, but I don't think it's real high on my, like, oh, that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. But what I do think is that if I align my nervous system, because I would align differently with you, Pam, and with you, Natalie, because your nervous systems are both different. I'm the constant, but you're different. Mm-hmm. So then I would try to align my nervous system with each of you. It's listening then, paying attention to my brain, my spinal cord, and my organs. Yes. In this case, probably more gut. Mm-hmm. It's more than mirroring. It's adjusting, and it's if I listen to what each of you are saying, so if these would be one-on-one, then I, since I'm trying to be aware, I will be the one that's adjusting my nervous system to your nervous system. Now, I'm still trying to figure out how do I do this in a practical way to teach it. But what I'll often do when I'm presenting to large groups is I'd like to go in early, and Pam knows this, and then I observe the individuals. And then I listen very carefully to what's going on. And then I'm going to align my nervous system to theirs. So I may not start every talk with a big blast of energy. Depends probably where it is on the conference. So it's meeting it, matching it, and then try to move it. Where you see a lot of presenters or speakers or people building rapport, it's like, this is how I'm going to do it. You know, are they, you know, it's like, well, if everybody's there, then maybe that's a good match. But if they're not, maybe it's not a good match. So that's the one I'm working on. And so stay tuned.
Stay tuned. We'll have you back on to unpack that when you've kind of figured out and can give us the tools on that.
But does it make sense? So if you have all your stuff going on in your life, then your child then or partner or spouse or sibling, you know, whatever. In some ways you have to move. You have to probably tamp down on yours. First read the others and then try to do the aligning. And it sounds a little woo-woo. And I don't mean, but I've tried it and it works.
Interesting. Well, and yours sounds less woo-woo than mine, because I think I have the exact same practice as you, Dr. John. If it's, you know, entering into a room, especially if it's a larger room of 200, 500 people, or I think the same applies. If it's a room of 20 people, you have, for you, it's the I talk about it in the stance of energy, and you talk about it in the stance of 20 individual nervous systems or 200 individual nervous systems. I do the same. I want to make sure that I'm in that space. I usually stand in the corner of the room so that no one knows that I'm there and they're not adjusting themselves because, oh, the next speaker is here, right? Because that starts to turn, their brain starts to process, their gut is, you know, well, what are they going to talk? Right. All of that starts to shift. So I try to slide in the back of the room. Now everyone's going to know my secrets. I slide in the back of the room and I try to read the temperature of the room. And there is a big piece for me in anchoring in who I am before taking the stage, right? Because I don't want to go confused and then take the stage. It's making sure that I'm solid in who I am and then bringing everyone either along with me or meeting them where they are, because you're right. Sometimes you've got to
totally different.
You've got to shift. You've got to completely shift because of where they are.
Exactly.
And if you're right before lunch, or right after lunch.
Yeah, either way.
Their eyes are moving in one direction or the other.
Exactly.
love it.
So we started with then the three principles that I think are important to know about the underlying mechanism, with the belief that if you understand this mechanism, you start to then gain a better understanding yourself. Once you have that, then a better understanding of how you communicate with others, may actually then start to understand your own resiliency, why you have it, don't have it.
Yeah.
You then go, because remember, the moment you were born, your brain's been looking for those wiring instructions.
Yeah.
The good news is your brain can change. Plastic, neuroplasticity. You can rewire it. Takes a lot more energy after age 25 than under 25. Sleep is going to be your superpower there.
Love it.
And then the understanding that when you are given a choice, when the brain's given a choice between two tasks, it typically will choose the one that requires the least amount of energy, because it's probably an evolutionary, protective, survivor type of mechanism. And then it's like, all right, how do I overcome that? Habits. Create habits so the behavior is reflexive, that you don't even have to think about it. How do you do that? Especially resiliency. Incrementally, small little steps. We mentioned the 10, take 10 minutes for yourself. Just go for a walk. It's for you. Don't have to do anything else. So at the end of the day, you can go, I did that for me. No one else. I did it solely for me. I'm worthy of getting that. And now I'm going to sleep on it and let sort of the wiring go.
Love
so
it.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about the brain.
Yes.
Oh, listeners got a couple ideas. I'll work on this alignment of the nervous systems for any future work. Thank you. You guys have been fabulous.
Yeah.
I turn it back to you.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I know I learned a ton, and I think the biggest thing for me was just the awareness of those top three things, and then how I can use that awareness to now help me be more resilient when things are coming up. I know I'll use it with coaching. I know I'll use it in my life. So super excited that you were here to share this with us, and hopefully you will come on again and share more information as you are finding it out. But if our listeners found this valuable, which I hope they did, please share this. So again, we can grow our community or our society, whatever it is that we're trying to grow here. I'm just absolutely grateful. Go to Reignite Resilience, our Facebook page. And we will see you here on our next time. Anything, final words, Natalie?
Dr. John, I want to just say thank you. Thank you. Our friendship is new. I am so honored to have the opportunity to visit with you today. I have to tell you, when Pam told me about you and I started to research you, I was like, oh my gosh, like an actual scientist?
This is the real expert.
Exactly. We're going to talk about the brain. And so this is tremendously helpful. And as Pam mentioned, as you continue to do the work on the brain organ communication in both directions,
yes,
we would love to have you back because I think there's so much to unpack there, and it would absolutely impact how we're showing up every day in every conversation, not just for our personal relationships and our business relationships, and that would just strengthen everybody's resiliency. So thank you, Dr. John. It was a pleasure.
You're welcome. Thank you both. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Reignite Resilience. We hope that you had amazing ahas and takeaways. Remember to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform, like it, and download the upcoming episodes. And if you know anyone in your life that is looking to continue to ignite their resilience, share it with them. We look forward to seeing you on our future episodes. And until then, continue to reignite that fire within your hearts.